is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Turkey, the power of Asia Minor, the entrance to the Black Sea where the war drags on. The Wall Street Journal in these last hours has summarized the challenges for the people of Turkey and the region. The catastrophic earthquakes that shook Turkey and Syria in February deepened the economic challenges facing the Turkish state by causing $103 billion in damages, equivalent to about 9% of the projected size of the country's economy. The quakes killed more than 56,000 people across both countries, leveled entire Turkish cities, and damaged factories. In addition, Turkey now suffers, says the Wall Street Journal, from one of the highest rates of inflation in the world at more than 51%, according to government's official figures. Independent economists estimate inflation at 112%. I welcome Sinan Çiddi of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies and the Marine Corps University to guide me through what appears to be an impossible task to solve all this in time for the election choice within these next weeks. Turkey goes to the polls to choose to stay with Mr. Erdogan or for his opponents. Sinan, a very good evening to you. The earthquake is not solved. The economy is not solved. And yet what we have right now is a political campaign underway. How is it being conducted in Turkey? Is it on the television, in the streets, the way it is in the U.S., or how does the election go forward with the grief of the earthquake and the cost of living? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and thanks for having me again. First of all, thank you for picking up on this very critical issue as Turks go to polls. I think the human aspect as well as the calamity that has followed the earthquakes is quite prescient, and it really is weighing on the minds of millions of Turks who are in or were in the affected earthquake zones. And obviously, it has devastated their livelihoods and their abilities to go about their daily business. And I say thank you simply because inside of Turkey's electoral sort of cycle, as it continues to unfold until May 14, when the election will happen, there seems to be this sort of, at least in the western parts of Turkey, in the bigger cities, some sort of forgetfulness as to what's exactly happened and the economic and human impact this is having. Both the government as well as the opposition parties have been criticized for not necessarily actually, you know, going into the earthquake zones and continuing to sort of listen to the plight of people and what they need. Ordinary citizens who will cast their ballot, it remains to be seen whether the millions of people from these earthquake-stricken zones will actually be able to cast their ballots in their places where they're actually domiciled. They may not be able to simply because of the vast amount of damage that has occurred to the region, and the government's still pretty unclear about exactly how balloting will be able to take place in earthquake-stricken zones, simply because, you know, the schools and public buildings where votes usually would have been cast have been completely destroyed or beyond repair. So we're still awaiting the results on this. But what impact will it have upon voters' behavior? Again, just by this notion of the fact that the earthquake happened a couple of months ago, what you have seen is Erdogan really bounce back in the polls. He's at the sort of mid 40% range. And people assumed, or some people assumed, that this would, you know, the earthquake itself would have a devastating impact on Erdogan's numbers, simply because the government has been held widely responsible for the earthquake because they didn't take enough measures to ensure that buildings were up to code or standard to withstand earthquakes. But that seems to have been, at least by the numbers stage, seems to be forgotten about. And Erdogan seems to have ridden this wave out quite well.
The wave is the doubts about the future. He's been 2 decades now in authority, and the result is an economy that is sagging. I see that his opponent, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, is that how I say that correctly?
Yes.
Kılıçdaroğlu is making the cost of living a major piece of his campaign. At 104% independent estimate of the inflation, that is a crusher for any president in any administration. Doesn't matter how you've ruled in the past. is Mr. Erdogan responding to a 104% estimate?
So you're very right in the sense that, you know, in any comparable sense, whether you accept the government's official number of 50% or 50-odd percent inflation rate, or the likely more accurate sort of independent economist assessment of over 100% inflation, this under normal circumstances should be devastating on any government sort of electoral prospects. At least in Turkey's past, it was. At right now, voters don't seem to be necessarily overwhelmingly interested in punishing Erdogan for this and not re-electing him, simply because at face value, if you look at it, voters are basically having to make a calculated choice, either to stick with Erdogan or go with this, with the opponent, the alternative, Mr. Kılıçdaroğlu. And what seems to be, at least as the way I read it, is voters seem to be essentially prioritizing, you know, stick with the devil that they know, right? Erdogan has turned on the monetary taps. Right now, for example, you know, pensioners have been given a massive, not a massive, but a, you know, a public holiday sort of bonus in their retirement checks, right? Erdogan has issued this sort of, you know, free natural gas to households for at least 1 month going forward. And therefore, what you are likely to see is, you know, when voters make up their minds about this, they're looking at what Erdogan is, you know, offering them in the open space versus what... you know, the opposition candidate may or may not be able to give them. And right now, it doesn't look like there's a considerable amount of trust in Mr. Kılıçdaroğlu because he's largely an unknown commodity, right? And Erdogan is doing his best to tarnish him by saying, look, his public record, right, when he was a public officer in charge of the country's social security system was dismal. Do you really want to sort of vote for a guy who will make your economic situation worse? So it seems to me that, you know, part of why Erdogan's numbers are quite strong still is because, yes, voters are upset about high inflation. Voters are upset about the, you know, difficult living standard, economic standards that they're having to weather. But when asked who best to sort of get them out of this, it seems like this, you know, there's at least a good chunk of voters who still believe Erdogan's the man.
Looking beyond the horse race, the last time we talked, Sinan, I believe Mr. Erdogan had made common cause with an extreme group who were associated with jihadism in some fashion, extreme statements. And now I see your report at FTD that Mr. Erdogan, which in Europe would be called an own goal, has on the telephone made remarks about Israel. And it's a deep puzzler. Because I've been reading and been led to understand that Mr. Erdogan was seeking accommodation with Israel this last year, perhaps around the edges of the Abraham Accords. And
yes,
taking to the telephone and making remarks about the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the basis of news reports seems odd. Is this more of his campaign to gather up a splinter party for his vote?
So, good question. And so, Erdogan, you're right, as you correctly suggest, got in, you know, issued a statement regarding, you know, following the escalation of violence at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Israel, basically saying on a telephone call with the Iranian prime minister that it was up to the Islamic world to take a stand against Israel's aggressions, right? And that does fall contrary to the sort of, you know, trust-building measures that Erdogan's supposed to have been interested in. You know, if you remember, he hosted a bilateral meeting or hosted the Israeli president in Ankara. They've reappointed ambassadors, et cetera, et cetera. So there was this some belief that essentially that, you know, Erdogan was interested in mending fences with Israel. But I still think that kind of holds true at the sort of surface level, because the moment or that Erdogan has chosen to sort of take a dig or take a stab at Israel, right, basically might cost Erdogan nothing in the short term, because right now, as we all know, Israel is slightly too distracted at home with protests and strife right now. So the government of Israel is pretty distracted in terms of wanting to sort of quell the disturbances that are going on there and sort of find a way out of the sort of the rut that it's in. So it's not as exactly in a position to sort of go in a sort of war of words with Erdogan. So I think Erdogan's just chosen an opportune moment to just sort of have a slight dig at Israel without having to pay any diplomatic price for it. While at home, that sort of anti-Israeli statement is going to be an additional sort of notch in his belt to voters, whereby he still looks sort of strong, you know, as a strong advocate for the Palestinian cause, right? And going forward, I still don't expect anything to change vis-a-vis Erdogan's own sort of approach to mend fences with Israel. But right now, I think the Israeli government's a little too distracted to take on Erdogan.
I'm speaking with Sinan Chitty of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies and the Marine Corps University about the looming vote in Ankara in all of Turkey for the new president or to re-elect President Erdogan. When we come back, we'll come to the Congress and a major warplane, the F-16, and the question about how Ankara has handled its relations between the U.S. and Russia these last years. Looking beyond the horse race, if Erdogan is returned or if he is not, the region is at war. The Black Sea Basin is at risk. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.